And a stretch. Here's the bunt. It's down to first. Hoskins has it. He goes to second. They get the out there. Throw to first. It's in time. Heck of a play. Reese Hoskins starts the 3-6-4 double play.
Well, of course, you know, it's the Phillies, and they play great fundamental defense. Jody McDonald, Glenn Mack now. It is our pleasure now to talk to Ben Davis, who will be calling the game today. Moshe, you're going to have to put him up. There he is. Now I see him. Moshe, it's not working. You're going to have to call him up. Okay. Hey, Ben. How are you, pal?
I'm doing great. I'm standing on the field here at Citi Field, and just getting the field ready, and I apologize if you hear a plane or two fly over.
we know that from all these years. Just a really general question to begin with. Like, what does it feel like to you? Because it's been a long time to be calling these games in what is a pennant race.
It's exciting. It's been a while. You know, obviously that they've had some decent teams in recent years and just kind of fallen off at the end. But I think this team has a different attitude. They have a different persona. They have a lot more confidence. They believe in each other. It's just a whole different feel in this clubhouse right now, and it's exciting times, and I've seen no signs of them slowing down.
All right, need an honest answer here. As a former major league hitter, which of those two starting pitchers would you have delayed at the bat rack more so before you had to get in there and take your hacks against one of those two?
Nola or DeGrom?
Correct.
I'd rather take my chance. I know this is going to sound silly. I'd rather take my chances with DeGrom because I couldn't hit a lot of pitches with depth, and Aaron's curveball would have given me fits. I'll tell you that right now. So I'll take my chances with 100, you know, mile an hour fastball and 94 mile an hour slider. I'm not saying I'd do well against it, but any pitch with depth, like Aaron can throw that curveball at will, he would have struck me out every time because I just didn't do well on those pitches. So I'll take my chances with DeGrom. Aaron was unbelievable last night. He was unbelievable. We actually rode up in the elevator last night after the game, and I said, "Yo, dude," I said, "you had 38 pitches after two innings. You finished eight innings with 96. How the heck did you do that?" And he goes, "First pitch strikes, and they were aggressive." He goes, "I'll take a first pitch rollover or pop up any day of the week." And I mean, he ended up averaging only 12 pitches per inning for those eight innings. He was phenomenal last night.
He was great, and he's really been on a terrific hot streak. And they need him if they're going to get into the postseason. They need him to do well. He has really dropped off late in seasons in past years. We're not quite there. I mean, September would be that moment. Any idea why he's dropped in recent years and how that can be avoided?
Well, I think a lot has to do with his workload. You know, I think right now he's second in the National League in innings pitched. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, he's been the guy that's taken the ball every fifth day for the last, I don't know, 5 years. I think the workload has caught up to him. Maybe he's changing his routine a little bit more, maybe laying off a little bit more and getting a little bit more rest. But I don't see that happen this year. The way he's throwing the baseball, his confidence level is at all-time high. And they're going to need him down the road. You know, to have Wheeler and Nola, that's as good as 1-2 punches you're going to find, especially in the National League. So, you know, I'm going to take my chances with him and see how he does. But definitely, I think he definitely, you know, he knows it's in him. He said himself that I've been disappointed the way I performed in September the last couple of years. So he's definitely going to look to change that.
Ben, Glenn and I were just talking about this before we punched you up. Defense, corner, infield spots for the Phillies. Alec Bohm and Reese Hoskins have been well below average for a good chunk of their major league career. But despite what Keith Hernandez thinks, they've actually picked it up. Bohm has been phenomenal over third base, and Hoskins has been improved at first base. How do you improve your defense in the middle of a season?
Well, I was talking with Bobby Dickerson this morning, and the amount of work that he puts in with these guys, you know, if you're the general fan, you might think, oh, they just show up, they put their uniform on, they go out and play. These guys work. I mean, they work, and they take a lot of pride in. Bobby Dickerson is as good as it gets, and you know, he was asking me about that play last night with Reese. I mean, that was phenomenal. There was zero hesitation. That was, you know what, I'm getting this out at second base, and hopefully we'll get two. They ended up turning two, and it was a phenomenal play. And we've been critical of Reese's play at first base. And, you know, there's been times where he's struggled over there. But what he did last night and the way Alec Bohm has performed, Alec Bohm has made some exceptional plays. I mean, like Nolan Arenado plays. The turnaround he has made has been nothing short of remarkable. And, you know, these guys work their tails off day in and day out to make sure that they're getting their work in. So when it comes to chance for them in the game, they're ready.
Hey, Ben, the old axiom is that a manager is going to win or lose you five games a year, right? That's basically what they say. So now the Phillies were 21-29 when Joe Girardi got fired. I think they are 40-21 since that point. What is it about the Tomper that's got it, or what has happened to this team with this manager that really created this turnaround?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think, one, it was inevitable that the hitters were starting to pick it up a little bit. And two, it's just – and I love Joe. Joe and I played against each other. We had a very good relationship, you know, and it was just something that the players look to me now like they're more confident in their abilities. They're eager to get to the ballpark. They know their roles, and I think that's evident in the bullpen. You know, they know their roles. It's just a different mindset right now, and Tomper is a guy that, you know, the first two games of the National Series, I'm sorry, the Marlins Series that they won, mm-hmm. He did his press conference, and you didn't know if he won by 10 runs or lost by 10 runs. And then
that last game,
that day game on Thursday, you didn't know that the team lost, and you didn't know if they lost or won by 10 runs. He's the same guy every day, and I think that's something that the professionalism that he carries, I'm not saying Joe didn't have it, but the professionalism that Tomper has, I think the players feed off that, and they come ready to kick somebody's tail every day. And they know their roles, and they are just performing at a rate, I think, that we kind of expect them to.
Ben, I've got the Philly schedule in front of me. They got this finale against the Mets today. Advantage Phils because they've got Wheeler. Well, though Bassett's having a nice year for the Mets,
yes,
it's not
yes.
Wheeler. So it's a favoritism to the Phils today. And then they play Cincinnati, and then they play the Mets again. And then they play Cincinnati again.
Yeah.
So for the a lengthy stretch, you're playing two teams. With this team, the Phillies team, the way that it's assembled, the way that it's playing, is that a good thing or a bad thing that they're diving in against two specific teams over a two-week period?
Yeah, I was never a big fan of playing the same team over and over, but that's what they're going to have to do. You can only play the teams that are on your schedule, and this is the way they have to go about it. You know, they get the Mets today, and then obviously train Cincinnati, but the weekend after next weekend, they're done with the Mets. So, you know, you got to try and gain as much ground, try and win every game, try and win every series. And, you know, it's, again, you can only play the teams that's on your schedule. I you know, this is a good ball club here in New York. I think the Phillies, I don't know. You look at them and the bottom, I was talking with Greg Murphy today on the way in. I said, you know, the bottom of their lineup doesn't really scare me, the Mets. You know, you get through Marte and Alonso and Lindor and those guys. And then after that, it's kind of eh. So, you know, I like the Phillies' chances. And, you know, obviously Cincinnati's struggling this year, but they're still a big league ball club. Can't take anyone for granted. But bottom line, and I don't think they look forward. I think these players, I think they just play the game on that particular day. They're not ones to really look ahead. They're only worried about the task at hand, and that they're going to worry about Chris Bassett today.
All right, Ben, you played seven seasons in the major leagues as a catcher, and we got into mm-hmm. a discussion with a caller today about how catchers cannot block home plate anymore, and you know how he was arguing that Real Muto was not particularly good, adept at the swipe move, and so on. My sense is that no catcher likes the new rule where you can't block the plate. It is designed, the Buster Posey rule is designed to protect catchers, but I don't know if catchers like it. Your guy played the position. What do you think?
Well, you are still allowed to block the plate on balls in the infield, so you still can do that. But on the throws from the outfield, you cannot block the plate. So that is something that, you know, I think that the average fan doesn't know. I don't like it. Glenn, what is the purpose of any defense in any sport is to do what? Prevent the other team from scoring, right?
Yeah.
And if I'm going to do that, if I'm at home plate, I don't want the guy to score. So how can I avoid that? Well, you take the plate away from him. I don't like the rule. You know, it's affected the game, I think, for the worse. And listen, if you don't want your catcher hurt, put him in a different position. If he's that valuable to you and you worry about him getting run over and breaking something, then put him in a different position. But
are you suggesting that was not a particular issue with you?
No,
I was your value was not such that they would.
My value is not
put Ben at first.
So I mean, there's sometimes you got to give your body up. But you know what? If I did prevent a run, then that was my whole objective. That was the goal of the defense, is to prevent the run. And if I had to do so, give my body up, then I did it.
Yeah, I think every catcher has that mentality. Sorry, Joe.
Well, you have to. To play that, I mean, you got to be a little dumb, but you also got to have that mentality like, yo, you're not, this is my play. You ain't getting there.
Got to get that shin guard down and make sure the guy doesn't get in there, but that's against the rules with outfield throws now, as Ben correctly points out.
Yeah.
All right, need a little catcher scouting report from you. Noah Syndergaard has gotten two starts for the Phillies so far. Had the weird one, complete game, a win, but didn't really pitch that well. Gave up 11 hits in 5 innings. That's a lot. Came back, pitched better against the Marlins. Got a no decision, but only 2 runs over 6 innings. What are you seeing out of Syndergaard? Comp to what he used to be when he was Thor with the Mets. Can he get up to speed and be closer to that level pitcher between now and the end of the season? How's he playing? I got about 27 questions here. I apologize. give us a Thor scouting report from Ben Davis, the former catcher.
Well, he's obviously not the guy that throws 103 anymore, so he's more of a pitcher. And he's a guy that, you know, relies heavily on the sinker. He's mixing a few more curveballs, but he's a guy that has to stay down in the zone, like any other pitcher. But if you're going to throw predominantly sinkers, you have to be down. Once that you elevate that sinker, it flattens out, and boy, is it a good pitch to hit. So I think, you know, he's made some good pitches, made some bad pitches, but the pitches that he's gotten hurt on, they have been elevated, and he's got to realize that, you know, he's got to get the ball down. Is he going to overpower guys at times? Not as much as he used to, but he still has enough giddy up, you know, 94, 95. To get the rush it by you. So, but I think he's trying to figure out, like Zach Wheeler early in the year when he didn't have his fastball. He said, I'm not upset that I'm not throwing 98-99. I'm upset that I can't pitch with 93-94. And I think that's where Syndergaard is right now. He's got to be able to pitch with that 93-94, occasionally 95, to keep the ball down to induce soft contact. And if he can stay off barrels, you know, I like his chances.
Ben Davis, it is always a pleasure. You will be calling the game today with Tom. It's you and Tommy today?
Just Tom and I, yes.
There you go.
Yep.
Looking forward to it.
In Citi Field. So, yeah, they've been working on the shield since I got here at 9:15, and that's just unbelievable, the amount of work they do. These guys, I don't think they get enough credit.
Exactly.
Ben Davis speaking out for Groundskeepers, a man of the people. Ben,
right.
Enjoy.
Well, me too. All right, guys, thanks so much.
All right, pal. We'll see you. Well. There you go.
Appreciate. And, oh, by the way, if the rotation goes as it is, yeah. Syndergaard will get a start against the Mets next weekend here at Citizens Bank Park.
That'd be fun.
Should be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, that will be fun. I like it. Good thought. Let's get Tyrone in Middletown. You're on with Jody Mack, Glenn Mack. Now, hey, Tyrone.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You got it.
Wow, it's an honor following a former major leaguer. When I, just as a casual fan, I like to one thing of note I really admire about the Phillies is that last night they were going toe-to-toe with the Mets and pitch for pitch, hit for hit, and their defense was stellar. I particularly loved that play that Alec Bohm made, that bare-handed grab.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to his right and threw him out at first. Excuse me, I'm breathing a little hard.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Car.
Take your time. That's okay. We got you.
Yeah, car washing at my age is a little...
there you go.
You know what?
You got a nice day to do. Go out and wash the car.
Exactly. Yeah, but I'm particularly encouraged by the fact that these are low-scoring games, but the Phillies are in the game just about to the last pitch. And I think of note when Bryce Harper comes back, do you think that initially it'll be an adjustment period or will they be able to handle the transition smoothly? Because long ball Hall,
yeah.
This guy, I really love his swing when he hit that double-decker home run last week. I mean, this guy has power.
Yeah. I think it's going to – I mean, I think it's fair to think it's going to take Bryce Harper a little bit of time to get in stride. Are we still – Jody, last we heard, we're looking at like a end of August, early September return?
When he was on the broadcast, I'm pretty sure it was the Phillies one. He did back-to-back days. He did the Phillies game, and then he did the Apple broadcast.
Yeah, he was pretty good, too.
As well. Yeah, he's got a future if that's what he wants to do when his contract runs out 12 years from now. So we got a long way to wait before he broadcasts again. Hopefully he's never hurt badly enough that they need him up in the broadcast booth. He said September-ish.
Mm.
which I was hoping for August-ish rather than September-ish, but that's where he went. And ish could mean a couple of days before September, all into your own interpretation. But my guess would be we won't see him till after the end of this month.
Yeah, and it's fair to figure it's going to take him a couple of weeks to get his swing and stride. What you really want him for is the those last, what, 15 games of the year and then presumably into the playoffs. That's the best you hope for, right? That he gets in a groove.
Right, but the different guys want to handle this differently and different teams handle it differently. I don't know if he'll go out on a minor league rehab or not, or if he'll just go sim game stuff with his own pitchers throwing to him. But he'll have the chance to get his swing in order before he gets activated. And, yeah, I'm hoping he hits the ground running and is damn close to the MVP-type player that he was before he went down.
Well, that would be nice. Let's get Mike in. Mike, it says North Cadet. Where the heck are you? I can't read the whole thing. Where are you? Well, maybe you're nowhere. Mike, are you there?
Yo, I'm right here. Hang on there, buddy.
All right, well, come to the phone, Mike.
I am.
Get out of the bathroom and come to the phone. Come on now.
Hang on one second. I wasn't in the bathroom, but I was at the other end of the garage. Hey, look.
Yes.
You got to score a run in nine innings. I don't care who you're facing. Okay? DeGrom, Nolan Ryan, Scherzer. Didn't they just light up Scherzer a while back for like five runs? You have to score a run off DeGrom in six innings. Come on. All these guys that can hit a home run and then one run in three innings of relief pitcher.
Yeah. Jody, I'm going to let you handle this.
Yeah. You watched last night's game and that's what you came away with. Shame on the Phillies for not hitting a two-time Cy Young Award winner. Really?
No, I don't. Like I said, I don't care who it is. What are they going to do when they face the Braves, the Dodgers, the Mets, and they throw their two best pitchers? They're going to score
you wanna
no
know
runs,
something?
One
now
run.
Now that I think about it, you're right. They should just shut the season down.
You're taking it too far there.
No, you've taken it too far, sir, by suggesting that because Jacob DeGrom threw a hell of a game against them, why are we even considering the Phillies a team that can do something in the postseason? That's what you just said.
All right, let me try to play middleman, Mike. Hold on. Let me play middleman.
Go ahead.
In the last week, they beat Alcantara of Miami, who's probably the best pitcher in the National League this year, correct?
Correct.
They beat Scherzer on Friday night, who is a future Hall of Famer, correct?
I believe that, yes.
Okay, so two out of three against certified aces. I'll take that.
Well, I will too, but when they throw two aces at you, what are you going to do in the playoffs? You're going to score one run?
No, you're probably going to split. The other teams have great players too. What you need and hope for and what you've been getting is Zach Wheeler has been top of game. Aaron Nola has been terrific. And by the way, Ranger Suarez.
Yeah,
he's so great the other
game,
night.
Didn't he?
Yeah, so you just have to outpitch him. That's the answer. And I appreciate it. And go back to cleaning your garage. And thanks for the call. But these things happen. I got nothing else on that, Jody.
No, I got nothing for him, period.
Okay. Hey. You know what? Never mind. I'm gonna take the break. We'll come back. We'll do what we're watching.
Glenn, yeah. I was going to say, because we had, you know, we used to get Roy Didinger when Ray would get upset. But do we have a name for Angry Jody? Because that was a bit of Roy Didinger
coming out
in Jody.
And you know what? And I was happy that I was able to just kind of tee it up like that. Well, it can't be Judy McDonald. My wife is Judy, and he's not a Judy.
Did I tell you it was going to happen today, Moshe?
Yes, you did.
Is that right?
Every once in a while, because I was apologizing to Moshe because I mispronounced his name. So I said, I get Judy every once in a while. Yeah. And to Glenn's credit, he doesn't do it often. He'll call me Ray before he'll call me
Judy. I have called you Ray. Yeah,
yes, you have called me Ray a couple of times. I said, if anyone I would accept it from, it would be Glenn, since it's his wife's name.
Yeah, well, all due respect, Jody. I don't often confuse you for her.
Yeah, that's a little bit of difference.
We need an angry Jody. Think about that.
I mean, the first thing comes to mind is just when he's angry, he's not Jody anymore. He's just Jode.
Maybe.
That's the only thing I can come up with.
Yeah.
Do I get a walk-in music when I turn into Angry Jode? Maybe. Was there any musical interlude when you got Angry Roy?
No. Angry Roy was never anticipated. It just happened. That was the great part of it.
It kind of stinks. That's true. Yeah. I don't enter any show believing I'm going to become Angry Joe, turn into the Hulk at some point during the show. But when someone is as, I'm trying to, flippant, disrespectful of the Phillies and what they've been doing of late.
How about dismissive?
Dismissive, because
I think he was
Jacob DeGrom, maybe the best pitcher in the last 15 years in baseball, threw a gem at them last night. Oh, the Phillies have no chance come playoff time because you can't get one run over six. I'm sorry. He deserved what he got.
Oh, yeah. No, you were great. Listen, as Moshe knows, I enjoy working with partners who are generally regarded as really nice guys, but have it in them to get angry. I just got a text from a WIP coworker, and it says, I love that Jody got mad there. So,
okay. I just got a caller that didn't want to get on the air suggested we call Angry Jody is Brody. I don't know.
Nah, we'll keep working on it. Moshe, do I have a read here? I got myself really confused with the reads. My computer.
No, Jody has a read here, though.
Jody has a read.
Oh, you want me to do a read here?
All right, then I tell you what. Let me give the numbers, hand it off to him. Coming up, what we're watching, always a highlight. 215-592-9494. I'm Glenn Mack now with Angry Jody McDonald on 94 WIP.
We'll play anywhere. We'll play on grass. We'll play on turf. We'll go to landfill. Doesn't matter. And that's what we got to be. That's who we have to be. Because we'll tread water as long as it takes to bury you.
Dan Campbell, the coach of the Lions, who's a maniac, and it's, to my way of thinking, a very likable guy, in the new season of Hard Knocks, Detroit Lions. And by the way, I just want to briefly thank Tyrion Lannister and Ron Burgundy and Snoop Dogg and Larry David, Jamie Lee Curtis, all those people for contributing to that sounder. Jody, the new season of Hard Knocks is on. As we know, it focuses on the Detroit Lions, who happen to be the Eagles' first opponent this year. Lev Schreiber narrates, as always. Dan Campbell is a maniac. Deuce Staley is the greatest. I'll give you my quick take. The Lions are super likable. Football is fun when you watch this. And it's the theme of this year's show is that, you know, hope springs eternal for a perennially bad franchise. Give me your overall on the new season of HBO's Hard Knocks.
First episode was very good. A lot of it has been there, done that. But I don't know about you. It works for me. Even though we've had bad teams be picked, new coach, changing attitudes, it's not that HBO hasn't done it before. It just always seems to work. Maybe it's a comfort level. Maybe it's like being an old shoe. I know someone
there you go.
That reference recently. That's what Hard Knocks is to me. Yeah. I continue to enjoy it, even though there's a little been there, done that to it. And, I like Campbell a great deal. He's just a fun guy and, I think, a motivational coach.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the bottom line, Glenn. The Lions are going to be bad again this year. No matter how inspirational Dan Campbell is, no matter how great a job Deuce Staley does competing with his buddy Aaron Glenn, the offense against the defense in practice and trash talking between coach and all that fun stuff from the other day, their team's just not that good. Their talent isn't that good.
Yeah.
And no matter how motivating their coaching staff is, I think that the Eagles are going to go in there and roll them in week number one, and the Lions will be lucky to win six games this year.
See, so that it's a funny thing, let me talk about several things that you said. I always like it too, and the reason I think is the timing. I've missed football. My friend is back. You can call it the old shoe, and it's you're there. It's I haven't had football for so long, and I've been watching some preseason football, Eagles and some other teams, and it's not the first quarter is okay, and then it usually gets pretty dreary. But this is – they're not playing the games, but they're in the practices in football. And Dan Campbell is on the stage, and he paces, and he looks like he can bench press the stadium. He's talking about grit, and he's quoting Metallica. And I wrote down one quote he said, if you can interpret this. Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes, I will beat your ass. We're going to tread water until we bury you.
Yeah, that is Dan Campbell in a quote. You can't have a better example of what Dan Campbell's all about than that particular quote. And, oh, by the way, No Leaf Clover might be my favorite Metallica song of all. And incorporated that into the video. Oh, my God, did I love that.
Okay. They got in the first episode, they got some things right. I thought and I've been watching it for years, and they always do the feature where the rookies have to come up and sing the song in front of the team, right? They've seen that a million times. Aidan Hutchinson doing Michael Jackson's Billie Jean was tremendous. I mean, he was really good, and it was entertaining, and it got the team stoked up. That was like four golden minutes, I thought.
The linebacker doing the salsa thereafter.
Yeah, was
great. Was great. Both of the rookies were great.
I don't know if they can play, but they can sing and dance.
Yes.
Deuce Staley, who's a maniac, it was great. You love Deuce. I think I can say this. He chews out guys for farting in the meeting room. Was pretty funny. Also got a little Hank Fraley, Honey Buns, a little bit of him. So what I think the local angle here, and I've heard it a lot on our station, look at what they're doing, because they're hitting in practice, and Campbell talks about how you have to hit, you have to get ready, you have to be in game shape, you have to have the mindset. And I think a lot of people here who are looking at the Eagles having Camp Cupcake are getting nervous about it, thinking, oh, my God, you know, the Eagles are sleeping through training camp, and look at what the Lions are doing. I agree with you that they're just not going to be that good. They can hit each other as much as they want. They're not going to be that good.
Glenn, if the Detroit Lions are a freight train coming your way, I'm doubting it.
Yeah, okay. That's it. That's it.
They can quote Metallica all they want, one of the greatest rock songs of the last 25 years. I just don't see it about this team because the talent's not that good. The impassioned plea by Jamal Williams talking about the team when they gather together on the field and he's almost coming to tears. Well, that's nice. Jamal Williams is a less than average back in the National Football League. And the Lions offense does not scare me. Their number one draft pick that they moved up to get isn't going to be ready for the start of the season. I think it's actually advantageous that the Eagles are playing the Lions early. I've been disagreeing with this, that you want to play the Lions at the end of the year when they know they're bad and they've already given up. No, I'd rather play them right away at the beginning of the season and get a W up on the scoreboard because you're just better than they are. So I like the fact that the Eagles are open up against the Lions, and I think they're winning week one by double-digit points.
All right. So talking about Hard Knocks, and you mentioned this. It's the same stuff that we've seen year after year. It's the coach-em-up tackling montage and the story. We haven't gotten it, but you get the undrafted rookie or the grizzled vet trying to hang on one more year, and the conflicts and the montages to hit you right in the feels. But some teams are very reluctant to show anything. Remember when they did the Raiders and Mayock and Gruden didn't want to give him anything? This one, Dan Campbell, man, he's out there and they're showing everything. Very hard to dislike. It helps the show that they got a loose nut as their main character this year. He's the main focus, and it's going to be good. You mentioned that great scene of Staley and Aaron Glenn trash talking. That was pretty funny, too. I'll give it a solid 8 out of 10 because I'm hooked.
Same here. Here's the one thing I will say, that it has lost a little of its luster, not of its own accord, but just a fact the way things have played out in the National Football League. It used to be a great pull back the curtain and you get to see stuff that John Hugh Public just never gets to see in the locker room. The players talking with the coach and the coach is talking directly to the players. That's not the case anymore because with social media having become what it is and teams put out their own media aspects, you get to see the victory speech by the coach in the locker room after the fact.
Andy Danson.
When Hard Knocks started, you had none of that. This was the first time you ever got to go into an NFL locker room and see video of what's being said and what's going down. So it's lost a little of its edge. Not a ton, but a little of its edge because teams control the video that comes out of their locker room post-game now and put it on their own social media. So they're swimming a little bit upstream with Hard Knocks. I thought they did a great job in episode one.
All the years that you watch Hard Knocks, is there one scene that particularly strikes you? Because there's one that does for me, and it's as a negative.
Really? Tell me. I don't know what
you're referring to. It's when Hugh Douglas got cut by Jacksonville on Hard Knocks.
Ooh.
Because we love Hugh. Hugh was on yesterday. We had him on yesterday. He got in the Eagles Hall of Fame. Yeah, what's his name? Was the Jaguars coach. Why am I forgetting his name? Anyway.
Coughlin?
No, I don't think it was Coughlin.
Coughlin
it was
the, didn't come?
I don't remember, but I remember they're discussing it and they're making their cuts. And Hugh, and like, oh, God, that was bad. One other thing I want to run by you, and we'll get back to the phones in 1 second, 215-592-9494. Don't forget, $50 gift card from Shy Vintage Sports for whoever gives us the most exciting play in sports. We haven't gotten a lot of those from our callers. So very soon, when the season starts, starting in week two, Thursday Night Football, Jody Mack, is going to be on Amazon this year. And during the baseball season, Phillies fans are trying to get used to watching games on Apple TV and so on. Most fans are not used to watching games streaming. Apple is going to be very different. They did a survey last week of football fans, Cumulus Media and Westwood One. They surveyed 1,000 Americans, 18 and older, who say they are football fans. And 54% of them who say they watch Thursday Night Football were unaware it was on Amazon, and I think 47% were not aware that it is on Amazon, and 54% said they are not Amazon Prime members. So that means they likely won't have access to the game when it streams unless they subscribe. Now, when it's your local team, they will put it on the local networks. But Thursday Night Football, which I just kind of sometimes come home and it's like, you know, 10 o'clock at night, and it's like, yeah, I'll just crash in bed and watch that. I do get Amazon, but a lot of people don't. Are people going to watch?
You know what I think will be tremendously intriguing, Mac, and somebody, you will be able to find the answer to this question somewhere. How much Amazon people who buy into it increase between week one and week two? Because if you're giving me these numbers, 50% didn't even know that it was on Amazon. Well, they're probably still not going to know. Those individuals will, because they were asked the question and they're going to react to it.
Those 1,000 people, right.
Right. But just overall, people are going to go, wait, was football on?
Yeah, they're looking for Thursday Night Football.
How do I have to do it? And they might get lousy ratings week one, but I guarantee you there will be an increase in week number two because people are going to go, oh, damn, I guess I'm going to have to pay for this because it's going to be on every single week going forward.
I guess. Now, listen, it's Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, right? So they're putting money into it. They got a big broadcast team, and I imagine they're going to do a very good production. But for me, Thursday Night Football is the one I watch the least. I just kind of, because it's often not very good games. I don't know if they improved the quality of the opponents for it this year. It's often been throwaway games. But for me, it's like, if I'm doing nothing and I just want to veg out, it's like, oh, there's football, I'll turn it on. But it's not something I usually seek. So I don't know how that's going to work.
You know what used to make me laugh, Mac Man? You'd get the quotes every single year from the players, and usually significant enough players that their name would grab your attention, that Thursday Night Football was wrong, and it was a joke, and it put them more at risk, and the NFL is screwing us by playing Thursday Night Football. And I would take this stance all the time. Well, tell the players that the amount of extra money they get because the game is on solo basis on a Thursday night, whatever broadcast outlet is, but they're getting 2% of their gross revenues because that game is separated and broadcast out. So ask every player if they'll take a 2% pay cut, and guess what? The NFL will do away with Thursday Night Football. How many do you think would actually say yes? Okay.
No, players will never take.
Never. The players fight the fight to make more money, and they never win in the CBAs. Yeah. They always have to take less practice than get more money. So now you're offering them a pay cut? Do you think anyone's going to stand up and go, yes, to prevent myself and my teammates from getting injured, I'll take a 2% pay cut? Nobody's ever doing that.
No, never. Let's get Jonathan in Plymouth Meeting. You're on with Jody and Glenn. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, I have a Phillies concern, or I could stick with football and do an Eagles point, too.
Well, what's top of your mind?
Well, if I dig deep, I got the Phillies, and I got us facing a really nasty lefty in the playoffs, and I got the bullpen lefty heavy. And I'm scared a little bit. I need your guys' relief on my scaredness of our depth on righty bats. We got Vierling and Marsh. Or no, Marsh is lefty. We got Vierling. That's it.
Well, no, you have Real Muto's a righty. You got Hoskins, who's a righty. You got Bohm, who's a righty. I'm not sure where.
Yeah, I agree. Our 1-9 is balanced starting, but if we need depth for any,
are you talking about the bench?
So,
yeah, well,
yeah.
If the Phillies got it, listen, the bench has done very well. I don't want to criticize it because the bench won the game on Friday, or guys who are not normally starters have won the game on Friday, Vierling for Castellanos.
The lefties are electric on the bench.
Yeah, I know, but these days, and Jody, I'll run this by you, teams have such short benches, and now that there's the DH, you don't need pinch hitters as much as you ever did, that I don't think you're going to win or lose a playoff game on your bench.
Okay, no. That does relieve my worries, so thank
it's
you.
Good.
And then on the Eagles, can I go on that too?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, so I got on, at any given time on the field, out of 11 players, on defense we'll have six or five like really above-average players at any time, and then on the offense maybe 6 to 8 at any time, and that's discluding Jalen. We got 3 X-factor linemen. We got 2 X-factor receivers. One will be on the field at all times. I think we got enough playmakers to really do some damage if we're coached right.
Joe,
don't disagree on any of the points. I might go to a 4th offensive lineman. Dickerson could get to that level this year. He's not there yet, but he could be able to get there. Yeah, no, they got 11 talent on this team.
Yep, they do. They stay healthy. They could be good. Jonathan, we got to run. Give us the most exciting play in sports.
The 30-plus yard, 40-plus yard elusive run play.
Okay.
With a nasty run. Juke.
I hear you. That's not bad. It's not bad. 215-592-9494. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn Macnow on 94 WIP. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn Macnow. Phillies Mets coming up today. 1:40 start, leading off around 12:40. Jody, one of the things I've always really liked and respected about you is you are one of the most level-headed people I know when it comes to all of these issues and don't get caught up in the frenzy of things. So, there was talk this last week, going NBA here, that Kevin Durant is embracing the possibility of once again playing with James Harden, who now plays on the Sixers. SNY reporter Ian Begley, I don't know him, so I don't know how good he is.
Oh, I do. He's
very
good.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I know Ian. I worked ESPN Radio for a period of time.
Sweet.
Used to have him on as a guest all the time. Is connected, does have very good sources. I would consider him a top informational guy
Great.
When it comes to New York basketball.
All right. Well, he said the Sixers have interest in Durant. Well, duh, of course they would. And that Durant has interest in the Sixers, which, of course, got everything started. Like, oh, this could all happen. Now, well, I gave my opinion yesterday, so I don't need to give mine. I'll ask you, do you buy the report, and do you think there's any possibility that that could happen?
I thought, no, you and I must not have discussed this last week. It must have happened after our show.
Yeah.
The story must have broken on Monday, that they got a picture of Durant and Harden at a concert together.
Overseas, I think.
Right, over in London, which magnified story and the possibilities and the like. And I know I discussed it here on WIP.
Not with me.
I discussed it with the camera at Eagles camp the other day. I'll say exactly the same thing because nothing has changed in my mind. Do the Sixers have a package that they can put together that would be good enough to entice the Nets to trade him to Philadelphia? Perhaps. But at least, again, if the reports are accurate, Boston has put a better offer on the table because they've got Jaylen Brown to be able to give up. And, oh, by the way, making the money work, you have to take Tobias Harris's contract. And I'm a Tobias fan more so than a lot of the Sixers fan base, at least as per my judgment. But not everybody feels that Tobias is a max money player and he's got to be in the deal. And we know Maxey would be the key guy in the deal. If you're getting the superstar player, not Kevin Durant superstar, but a superstar in his own right, Jaylen Brown in the deal, and you're getting other pieces like Derek White and draft picks, not just draft swaps, but picks. The Nets already have the Sixers picks because of the James Harden trade. So the Celtics, as per report, just an objective NBA observer, had a better offer on the table, which the Nets turned down. Nets turned down. So I just don't see it. Could it happen? Yeah. If the Celtics go, no, we're good. We went to the NBA final last year. They're picking us to win the most games under overs for the upcoming NBA season. We're going to keep our team together. And they pull that offer off the board. Now you got a legitimate conversation. Could the Sixers get something like that done? But when another team has made a better offer than the best one you can put out there, then I think the chances of him being a Sixer are supremely small.
Okay, I agree. I don't see it happening. And just on a side note, it was interesting to hear people like, well, you can't trade Maxey. Well, you can for him.
Yeah.
You can for Durant. Anyway, all right.
I'm a Maxey guy. Love Maxey. But you're talking about borderline top 10 NBA player of all time.
Yes.
Not of today, of all time. Durant, for me, would be somewhere between 10 and 15 all time in the history of the NBA. You're going to turn a deal like that down because you've got a good young guard?
That whole process was supposed to be about like acquiring assets you can trade when you're ready to win the whole thing, right? That was the whole process. That was the point of it?
I'm part of it, yes.
Yeah, well, that would be it. But I'm like you. I don't see it being possible. Eric in Maryland, you're on with Jody Mack and Glenn Mack now. Hey, Eric.
Hey, long time listener. It's been like 30 years. I don't know when you guys got together, but I was a true Philadelphia fan. Phillies were my team forever.
Thank you. Yeah.
My first game was a Connie Mack. Lou Brock was there. You know, Cookie Rojas. These are the names. And we're walking out of the stadium, and my dad's carrying me on his back. And a drunk or a homeless guy comes up and gives him money. My dad told me that story.
Well, there you go. All right, so what are you thinking today?
I'm thinking I want to get a perspective on baseball, football, having been displanted from Philly for the last 20 years. Baseball is the thing that was the best game, and football has now become like the better sport. That's one thing. Over all these years, like I've discovered that you really got to be in the town where you're watching the baseball games so you can talk to your buddies. And it's, you know, five or six, maybe eight games a week. And football, Eagles are my top forever now. And Phillies used to be my top.
Yeah.
And over time, just being out of the city, you start, where's your camaraderie? Well, I can't go to the bar 5 days a week and listen to
Eric, we got to move on. What's your what is the most exciting play in sports?
I like the shootout, either soccer or hockey, like at the World Cup or Olympic level.
Right.
That shoot.
Yeah. I got you. And then, well, in hockey, well, yeah, you do get the shootout. You don't get in the playoffs, thank God. I don't want to disagree with him. I hate the shootout. I just think that, you know, I understand that they don't want people there all night, but geez, it seems such an artificial, phony way to end a game.
And
I never liked it.
I will suggest the reason why you hate it is because it's derived from soccer.
No, that's not the reason.
No?
No, although that's an interesting perspective, and there may be, I've never considered that, but you may have some validity to that. No, I hate it because it's just such an artificial way to end a real game. And also, by the way, the Flyers have been terrible at it.
Terrible. They can never find a guy who's just very good at that. The TJ Oshies of the world never come to Philadelphia.
Yeah, he would be good. He would be something. Joel in Overbrook, you're on with Jody and Glenn. Hey, Joel.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have been following the Phillies since I was a little boy. I used to sit on my grandfather's knee and I watched Jim Constanti lose to the New York Yankees in the.
You should talk to our last caller. I think he's got the same perspective.
I listened, but you know something, and you gentlemen, and especially Angelo in the morning, are rabble rousers, which is fine because they point out the bad and they make people correct their ways. Okay?
Joey, are we rabble rousers?
Ah, you really are, but that's not a bad thing.
Joe, hold on one second. Hold on. Jody, would you consider us rabble-rousers?
I don't know if you saw these, because I think they went to both you and I. There are some Twitter responses today that would call me a rabble-rouser, because I disagreed with the caller earlier who gave Jacob deGrom no credit whatsoever for his ability to pitch. That shame on the Phillies for going six innings without scoring against a future Hall of Fame pitcher.
I thought that was a very reasonable, rational point of view.
Well, can I say something else?
Sure, come on in.
Okay, here's the situation. If I had to point my finger at the person most, the reason for the fact that the Phillies are so good, it's obviously the owner. We finally have an owner who spends money and doesn't really care. And I'm watching this, and I'm stunned out of my mind, because I remember just nothing but bad teams with Ted Lepsio and Kiko Fernandez. Oh, I want to throw up when I mention somebody's names. But take a look now at what we are. We have everything. They needed relievers. They go get relievers. They need some hitters with power. They get hitters with power. Our drafts are
he did,
are going
he
to be
did
better.
Spend, and you know, he said he would go over the luxury tax threshold when it felt it was time to do it, and this year he felt it was time to do it. I'm not going to throw a parade for John Middleton yet. He's fine. You know, I thought they did pretty well under Dave Montgomery for those years from 07 to 2011. So I don't know about with this. We finally have a good owner, but.
That's
anyway,
very fair. But Middleton still gets critiqued, and we're back to being a small market franchise. I've never felt the case since Middleton took over for Montgomery. You're right. It's been a nice run of ownership for the Phillies for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, no problem with that. 215-592-9494. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn Mack. Now coming up, very interesting Shibe Sports This Week in Philadelphia Sports History. Jody, I think the next one, everybody will remember where they were when they heard this news.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'll find out where you were. That's next on 94 WIP. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn Mack. Now, Phillies Mets coming up today, 1:40 start, leading off around 12:40. Jody, one of the things I've always really liked and respected about you is you are one of the most level-headed people I know when it comes to all of these issues, and don't get caught up in the frenzy of things. So, there was talk this last week, going NBA here, that Kevin Durant is embracing the possibility of once again playing with James Harden, who now plays on the Sixers. SNY reporter Ian Begley, I don't know him, so I don't know how good he is.
Oh, I do. He's
oh,
very good.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I know Ian. I worked ESPN Radio for a period of time.
Sweet.
Used to have him on as a guest all the time. Is connected, does have very good sources. I would consider him a top informational guy
when
it comes to New York basketball.
All right. Well, he said the Sixers have interest in Durant. Well, duh, of course they would. And that Durant has interest in the Sixers, which, of course, got everything started. Like, oh, this could all happen. Now, well, I gave my opinion yesterday, so I don't need to give mine. I'll ask you, do you buy the report, and do you think there's any possibility that that could happen?
I thought, no, you and I must not have discussed this last week. It must have happened after our show. The story must have broken on Monday, that they got a picture of Durant and Harden at a concert together. Over in London, which magnified the story and the possibilities and the like. And I know I discussed it here on WIP.
Not with me.
I discussed it with the camera at Eagles camp the other day. I'll say exactly the same thing because nothing has changed in my mind. Do the Sixers have a package that they can put together that would be good enough to entice the Nets to trade him to Philadelphia? Perhaps, but at least, again, if the reports are accurate, Boston has put a better offer on the table because they've got Jaylen Brown to be able to give up. And, oh, by the way, making the money work, you have to take Tobias Harris's contract. And I'm a Tobias fan more so than a lot of the Sixers fan base, at least as per my judgment. But not everybody feels that Tobias is a max money player and he's got to be in the deal. And we know Maxey would be the key guy in the deal. If you're getting the superstar player, not Kevin Durant superstar, but a superstar in his own right, Jaylen Brown in the deal, and you're getting other pieces like Derek White and draft picks, not just draft swaps, but picks. The Nets already have the Sixers picks because of the James Harden trade. So the Celtics, as per report, just an objective NBA observer, had a better offer on the table, which the Nets turned down. Nets turned down. So I just don't see it. Could it happen? Yeah. If the Celtics go, no, we're good. We went to the NBA final last year. They're picking us to win the most games, under overs for the upcoming NBA season. We're going to keep our team together. And they pull that offer off the board. Now you got a legitimate conversation. Could the Sixers get something like that done? But when another team has made a better offer than the best one you can put out there, then I think the chances of him being a Sixer are supremely small.
Okay, I agree. I don't see it happening. And just on a side note, it was interesting to hear people like, well, you can't trade Maxey. Well, you can for him.
Yeah.
You can for Durant. Anyway,
I'm a Maxey guy. Love Maxey. But you're talking about borderline top 10 NBA player of all time.
Yes.
Not of today, of all time. Durant, for me, would be somewhere between 10 and 15 all time in the history of the NBA. You're going to turn a deal like that down because you've got a good young guard?
That whole process was supposed to be about like acquiring assets you can trade when you're ready to win the whole thing, right? That was the whole process. That was the point of it?
I'm part of it, yes.
Yeah, well, that would be it. But I'm like you. I don't see it being possible. Eric in Maryland, you're on with Jody Mack and Glenn Mack now. Hey, Eric.
Hey, long time listener. It's been like 30 years. I don't know when you guys got together, but I was a true Philadelphia fan. Phillies were my team forever.
Thank you. Yeah.
My first game was a Connie Mack. Lou Brock was there. You know, Cookie Rojas, these are the names. And we're walking out of the stadium, and my dad's carrying me on his back, and a drunk or a homeless guy comes up and gives him money. My dad told me that story.
Well, there you go. Okay. All right, so what are you thinking today?
I'm thinking I want to get a perspective on baseball, football, having been displanted from Philly for the last 20 years. Baseball is the thing that was the best game, and football has now become like the better sport. That's one thing. Over all these years, like I've discovered that you really got to be in the town where you're watching the baseball games so you can talk to your buddies. And it's, you know, five or six, maybe eight games a week. And football, Eagles are my top forever now. And Phillies used to be my top.
Yeah.
And over time, just being out of the city, you start, where's your camaraderie? Well, I can't go to the bar 5 days a week and listen to
Eric, we got to move on. What's your what is the most exciting play in sports?
I like the shootout, either soccer or hockey, like at the World Cup or Olympic level.
All right.
That shootout.
Yeah. I got you. And then, well, in hockey, well, yeah, you do get the shootout. You don't get it in the playoffs, thank God. I don't want to disagree with him. I hate the shootout. I just think that, you know, I understand that they don't want people there all night, but, geez, it seems such an artificial, phony way to end a game.
And
I never liked it.
I will suggest the reason why you hate it is because it's derived from soccer.
No, that's not the reason.
No?
No, although that's an interesting perspective, and there may be, I've never considered that, but you may have some validity to that. No, I hate it because it's just such an artificial way to end a real game. And also, by the way, the Flyers have been terrible at it.
Terrible. They can never find a guy who's just very good at that. The TJ Oshies of the world never come to Philadelphia.
Yeah, he would be good. He would be something. Joel in Overbrook, you're on with Jody and Glenn. Hey, Joel.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have been following the Phillies since I was a little boy. I used to sit on my grandfather's knee and I watched Jim Constanti lose to the New York Yankees in the.
You should talk to our last caller. I think he's got the same perspective.
I listened, but you know something, and you gentlemen, and especially Angelo in the morning, are rabble rousers, which is fine because they point out the bad and they make people correct their ways. Okay?
Joey, are we rabble rousers?
You really are, but that's not a bad thing.
Joe, hold on one second. Hold on. Jody, would you consider us rabble-rousers?
I don't know if you saw these, because I think they went to both you and I. There are some Twitter responses today that would call me a rabble-rouser, because I disagreed with the caller earlier who gave Jacob deGrom no credit whatsoever for his ability to pitch. That shame on the Phillies for going six innings without scoring against a future Hall of Fame pitcher.
I thought that was a very reasonable, rational point of view.
Well, can I say something else?
Sure, come on in.
Okay, here's the situation. If I had to point my finger at the person most in the reason for the fact that the Phillies are so good, it's obviously the owner. We finally have an owner who spends money and doesn't really care. And I'm watching this, and I'm stunned out of my mind because I remember just nothing but bad teams with Ted Lepsio and Kiko Fernandez. Oh, I want to throw up when I mention somebody's names. But take a look now at what we are. We have everything. They needed relievers. They go get relievers. They need some hitters with power. They get hitters with power. Our drafts are
he did,
are going
he
to be
did
better.
Spend and you know, he said he would go over the luxury tax threshold when it felt it was time to do it, and this year he felt it was time to do it. I'm not going to throw a parade for John Middleton yet. He's fine. You know, I thought they did pretty well under Dave Montgomery for those years from 07 to 2011. So I don't know about with this. We finally have a good owner, but.
That's
anyway,
very fair. But Middleton still gets critiqued, and we're back to being a small market franchise. I've never felt the case since Middleton took over for Montgomery. You're right. It's been a nice run of ownership for the Phillies for the last couple of decades.
Yeah, no problem with that. 215-592-9494. He's Jody McDonald. I'm Glenn Mack. Now coming up, very interesting Shibe Sports this week in Philadelphia sports history. Jody, I think the next one, everybody will remember where they were when they heard this news.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'll find out where you were. That's next on 94 WIP.